in 67, they signed the FM on. Had Iggy.
Iggy, yes, indeed. I was there for much of how all that was going. Before it went on the air, there was a lot of testing, a lot of Coors consumption. And you have to do, I think they call it a proof of performance before you really get the official nod. And that testing out at the time, it was stereo. They started right off broadcasting in stereo, so that was kind of a new thing. And of course, they had to be able to separate the left and the right channel by so much and not have so much crosstalk. The transmitter was in the AM transmitter building, so there was a lot of parasitic kinds of problems that had to be filtered out. And in those days, there wasn't a real fancy system of studio to transmitter linking, so you had to coordinate a lot of stuff with the phone company. An AM signal can basically go, I think, on one pair of wires. Well, you get into multiple channel stuff and metering from a distance from all the different kinds of things. It got to be pretty sophisticated. So I think our chief engineer actually was engineering a lot of stuff for the phone company on the fly, too. He knew what could be done, and they didn't know how to get from point A to point B. So they
and everything was balanced, what they called balanced program loops at that time. And
so it finally went on the air, and I think there was probably lots of backroom discussions on what it was really going to sound like, because everybody had at that time, KVOC had their unique format, K2 had their format, and Katy had a unique format. So what are we going to do with this? Well, the decision was finally made, I think, to automate most of the broadcast day. That meant no live announcers. They had a system set up that worked with Magic and
Iggy.
And a lot of tapes.
The thing that I remember was that you'd have to go in, and of course there were no employees at KWY, so it was always the Katy guys that would have to go over and rewind the tapes. And if you'd forget, you'd get the call from Pat saying
something needs to be done over across the hall.
Yeah.
One of my most exciting jobs I ever had was being the Iggy master when the Dolly Holiday show was on. They got a canned program to play from midnight to 5 or something, and we used Iggy, but Iggy was really happy when she had big 7 or 8 inch tape reels.
15 inch,
whatever. But Dolly Holiday came on the standard, what are those, 7?
Yeah.
And so every half hour, you had to make her switch over to the other tape. You had to rewind the tape, get another tape ready to go and all that, and also record a newscast and weather forecast and make sure the commercials were sequenced right on the... There was a little carousel that played the commercials and stuff. I look around here in this studio we're in, and these guys are spoiled. They've got computers that do all of that, but...
Yeah.
At that time in my life, I was going to Casper College during the day and babysitting Iggy and the Dolly Holiday show all night. And then on weekends, I think I slept, except when I had remote broadcasts to do. So it was a grueling time.
Well, and then you were also doing sports, too, because that was one of your things. So you were always doing like this, keeping the scoreboard or scorebook and all of that for them, too.
I did play-by-play for both Natrona County and Kelly Walsh football and basketball, and some basketball for Casper College during that time. When I was first doing it, I don't think Kelly Walsh was even in existence or had just started. We would kind of, if we couldn't get a feed from Warland or Lander or something, we would go and do the play-by-play. So there were some road trips involved. But a lot of times I think they got feeds from the radio station in Sheridan or whatever.
They didn't have to travel.
Right. All they needed to do was agree on the length of the commercial breaks. And that was...
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.